Chapter 66. Nay, Senor, hereabouts in this dull, warm, most lazy, and hereditary land, we know but little of your vigorous north. ... Well then, Don, refill my cup. Your chitch is very fine, and ere proceeding further I will tell ye what our candlers are, for such information may throw side light upon my story. ... ...360 miles, gentlemen, through the entire breadth of the state of New York, through numerous populous cities and most thriving villages, through long, dismal, uninhabited swamps, and affluent, cultivated fields, unrivaled for fertility, by billiard room and bar room, through the holy of holies of great forests, on Roman arches over Indian rivers, through sun and shade, by happy hearts are broken, through all the wide contrasting scenery of those noble Mohawk counties, and especially, by rows of snow-white chapels, whose spires stand almost like milestones, flows one continual stream of Venetianly corrupt and often lawless life. There's your true Ashanti, gentlemen, there howl your pagans, where you ever find them, next door to you, under the long-flung shadow, and the snug patronizing lee of churches. For by some curious fatality, as it is often noted of your metropolitan freebooters, that they ever encamp around the halls of justice, so sinners, gentlemen, most abound in holiest vicinities. Is that a friar passing? ... said Don Pedro, looking downwards into the crowded plaza, with humorous concern. Well, for our northern friend, Dom Isabella's Inquisition wanes in Lima, ... Don Sebastian. Proceed, Senor. ... A moment. Pardon. ... cried another of the company. In the name of all us Limis, I but desire to express to you, Sir Sailor, that we have by no means overlooked your delicacy in not substituting present Lima for distant Venice in your corrupt comparison. Oh! Do not bow and look surprised. You know the proverb all along this coast corrupt as Lima. It but bears out your saying too, churches more plentiful than billiard tables, and forever open and corrupt as Lima. So too, Venice, I have been there, the holy city of the blessed evangelist, Saint Mark. Saint Dominic, purge it. Your cup. Thanks. Here I refill, now, you pour out again. ... Freely depicted in his own vocation, gentlemen, the candler would make a fine dramatic hero, so abundantly and picturesquely wicked is he. Like Mark Antony, for days and days along his green-turfed flowery Nile, he indolently floats, openly toying with his red-cheeked Cleopatra, ripening his apricot thigh upon the sunny deck. But ashore, all his effeminacy is dashed. The brigandish guise which the candler so proudly sports, his slouched and gaily ribboned hat bedecken his grand features. A terror to the smiling innocence of the villages through which he floats, his swart visage and bold swagger are not unshunned in cities. Once a vagabond on his own canal, I have received good turns from one of these candlers. I thank him heartily, would fain be not ungrateful. But it is often one of the prime redeeming qualities of your man of violence, that at times he has as stiff an arm to back a poor stranger in a strait, as to plunder a wealthy one. In sum, gentlemen, what the wildness of this canal life is emphatically evinced by this, that our wild whale fishery contains so many of its most finished graduates, and that scarce any race of mankind, except Sydney men, are so much distrusted by our whaling captains. Nor does it at all diminish the curiousness of this matter, that to many thousands of our rural boys, and young men born along its line, the probationary life of the Grand Canal furnishes the sole transition between quietly reaping in a Christian cornfield, and recklessly plowing the waters of the most barbaric seas. I see. ... impetuously exclaimed Don Pedro, spilling his chicha upon his silvery ruffles. No need to travel. The world's one Lima. I had thought now that at your temperate north the generations were cold and holy as the hills. But the story. apostrophe, I left off, gentlemen, where the lakeman shook the backstay. Hardly had he done so, when he was surrounded by the three junior mates and the four harpooners, who all crowded him to the deck. But sliding down the ropes like baleful comets, the two candlers rushed into the uproar, and sought to drag their man out of it towards the forecastle. Others of the sailors joined with them in this attempt, and a twisted turmoil ensued. While standing out of harm's way, the valiant captain danced up and down with a whale pike, calling upon his officers to manhandle that atrocious scoundrel, and smoke him along to the quarter deck. At intervals, he ran close up to the revolving border of the confusion, and prying into the heart of it with his pike, sought to prick out the object of his resentment. But Steelkilt and his desperados were too much for them all. They succeeded in gaining the forecastle deck, where, hastily slewing about three or four large casks in a line with the windlass, the Sea Parisians entrenched themselves behind the barricade. "Come out of that, ye pirates!" apostrophe apostrophe roared the captain, now menacing them with a pistol in each hand, just brought to him by the steward. "Come out of that, ye cutthroats!" Apostrophe apostrophe, Steelkilt leaped on the barricade, and striding up and down there, defied the worst the pistols could do, but gave the captain to understand distinctly that his Steelkilt's death would be the signal for a murderous mutiny on the part of all hands. Fearing in his heart lest this might prove but too true, the captain a little desisted, but still commanded the insurgents instantly to return to their duty. "Will you promise not to touch us, if we do?" apostrophe apostrophe demanded their ringleader.
Turn to.
"I make no promise to your duty. Do you want to sink the ship by knocking off at a time like this?"
"Turn to."
Apostrophe and he once more raised a pistol.
"Sink the ship?"
Apostrophe apostrophe cried Steelkilt. "Aye, let her sink. Not a man of us turns to, unless you swear not to raise a rope yarn against us. What say ye, men?" Apostrophe apostrophe turning to his comrades. A fierce cheer was their response. The lakeman now patrolled the barricade, all the while keeping his eye on the captain, and jerking out such sentences as these. "It's not our fault. We didn't want it. I told him to take his hammer away. It was boy's business. He might have known me before this. I told him not to prick the buffalo. I believe I have broken a finger here against his cursed jaw. Ain't those mincing knives down in the forecastle there, men? Look to those hand spikes, my hearties. Captain, by God, look to yourself. Say the word. Don't be a fool. Forget it all. We are ready to turn to. Treat us decently, and we're your men. But we won't be flogged. Apostrophe apostrophe, turn to.
I make no promises. Turn to, I say.
Apostrophe, looky now, apostrophe cried the lakeman, flinging out his arm towards him. There are a few of us here, and I am one of them, who have shipped for the cruise, d'ye see. Now as you well know, sir, we can claim our discharge as soon as the anchor is down, so we don't want a row. It's not our interest. We want to be peaceable. We are ready to work, but we won't be flogged.
Apostrophe apostrophe, turn to.
Apostrophe apostrophe roared the captain. Steelkilt glanced around him a moment, and then said,
"I tell you what it is now, captain, rather than kill ye, and be hung for such a shabby rascal, we won't lift a hand against ye, unless ye attack us. But till you say the word about not flogging us, we don't do a hand's turn."
Apostrophe apostrophe, down into the forecastle then. Down with ye, I'll keep ye there till ye're sick of it. Down ye go.
Apostrophe, shall we?
Apostrophe apostrophe cried the ringleader to his men. Most of them were against it, but at length, in obedience to Steelkilt, they preceded him down into their dark den, growlingly disappearing, like bears into a cave.
As the lakeman's bare head was just level with the planks, the captain and his posse leaped the barricade, and rapidly drawing over the slide of the scuttle, planted their group of hands upon it, and loudly called for the steward to bring the heavy brass padlock belonging to the companionway. Then opening the slide a little, the captain whispered something down the crack, closed it, and turned the key upon them, 10 in number, leaving on deck some 20 or more, who thus far had remained neutral. All night a wide-awake watch was kept by all the officers, forward and aft, especially about the forecastle scuttle and fore hatchway, at which last place it was feared the insurgents might emerge, after breaking through the bulkhead below. But the hours of darkness passed in peace, the men who still remained at their duty toiling hard at the pumps, whose clinking and clanking at intervals through the dreary night dismally resounded through the ship. At sunrise the captain went forward, and knocking on the deck, summoned the prisoners to work, but with a yell they refused. Water was then lowered down to them, and a couple of handfuls of biscuit were tossed after it. When again turning the key upon them and pocketing it, the captain returned to the quarter deck. Twice every day for 3 days this was repeated. But on the fourth morning a confused wrangling, and then a scuffling was heard, as the customary summons was delivered. And suddenly four men burst up from the forecastle, saying they were ready to turn to. The fetid closeness of the air, and a famishing diet, united perhaps to some fears of ultimate retribution, had constrained them to surrender at discretion. Emboldened by this, the captain reiterated his demand to the rest, but Steelkilt shouted up to him a terrific hint to stop his babbling, and bedeck himself where he belonged. On the fifth morning three others of the mutineers bolted up into the air from the desperate arms below that sought to restrain them. Only three were left. Better turn to now? ? Said the captain with a heartless jeer. Shut us up again, will ye? ? Cried Steelkilt. Oh certainly, the captain, and the key clicked. It was at this point, gentlemen, that enraged by the defection of 7 of his former associates, and stung by the mocking voice that at last hailed him, and maddened by his long entombment in a place as black as the bowels of despair, it was then that Steelkilt proposed to the two candlers, thus far apparently of one mind with him, to burst out of their hole at the next summoning of the garrison, and armed with their keen mincing knives, long, crescentic heavy implements with a handle at each end, run amuck from the bowsprit to the taffrail, and if by any devilishness of desperation possible, seize the ship. For himself, he would do this, he said, whether they joined him or not. That was the last night he should spend in that den. But the scheme met with no opposition on the part of the other two. They swore they were ready for that, or for any other mad thing, for anything in short but a surrender. And what was more, they each insisted upon being the first man on deck, when the time to make the rush should come. But to this their leader as fiercely objected, reserving that priority for himself, particularly as his two comrades would not yield, the one to the other, in the matter, and both of them could not be first, for the latter would but admit one man at a time. And here, gentlemen, the foul play of these miscreants must come out. Upon hearing the frantic project of their leader, each in his own separate soul had suddenly lighted, it would seem, upon the same piece of treachery, namely, to be foremost in breaking out, in order to be the first of the three, though the last of the 10, to surrender, and thereby secure whatever small chance of pardon such conduct might merit. But when Steelkilt made known his determination still, to lead them to the last, they in some way, by some subtle chemistry of villainy, mixed their before secret treacheries together, and when their leader fell into a doze, verbally opened their souls to each other in 3 sentences, and bound the sleeper with cords, and gagged him with cords, and shrieked out for the captain at midnight. Thinking murder at hand, and smelling in the dark for the blood, he and all his armed mates and harpooners rushed for the forecastle. In a few minutes the scuttle was opened, and, bound hand and foot, the still struggling ringleader was shoved up into the air by his perfidious allies, who at once claimed the honor of securing a man who had been fully ripe for murder. But all these were collared, and dragged along the deck like dead cattle, and, side by side, were seized up into the mizzen rigging, like three quarters of meat, and there they hung till morning. "Damn me!" apostrophe cried the captain, pacing to and fro before them, "the vultures would not touch ye villains!" Apostrophe apostrophe, at sunrise he summoned all hands, and separating those who had rebelled from those who had taken no part in the mutiny, he told the former that he had a good mind to flog them all round, thought, upon the whole, he would do, so he ought to, justice demanded it. But for the present, considering their timely surrender, he would let them go with a reprimand, which he accordingly administered in the vernacular. "But as for you, ye carrion rogues," apostrophe turning to the three men in the rigging, "for you, I mean to mince ye up for the tripods," apostrophe, and, seizing a rope, he applied it with all his might to the backs of the two traitors, till they yelled no more, but lifelessly hung their heads sideways, as the two crucified thieves are drawn. "My wrist is sprained with ye," apostrophe apostrophe he cried, "at last. But there is still rope enough left for you, my fine bantam, that wouldn't give up. Take that gag from his mouth, and let us hear what he can say for himself." Apostrophe apostrophe, for a moment the exhausted mutineer made a tremulous motion of his cramped jaws, and then painfully twisting round his head, said in a sort of hiss, "What I say is this, and mind it well, if you flog me, I murder you." Apostrophe apostrophe, "say ye so? Then see how ye frighten me." And the captain drew off with the rope to strike. "Best not," apostrophe hissed the lakeman. "But I must," apostrophe, and the rope was once more drawn back for the stroke. Steelkilt here hissed out something, inaudible to all but the captain, who, to the amazement of all hands, started back, paced the deck rapidly two or three times, and then suddenly throwing down his rope, said, "I won't do it, let him go, cut him down. D'ye hear?" Apostrophe apostrophe, but as the junior mates were hurrying to execute the order, a pale man, with a bandaged head, arrested them. Radney, the chief mate. Ever since the blow, he had lain in his berth. But that morning, hearing the tumult on the deck, he had crept out, and thus far had watched the whole scene. Such was the state of his mouth, that he could hardly speak, but mumbling something about his being willing, and able to do, what the captain dared not attempt, he snatched the rope and advanced to his pinioned foe. "You are a coward!" apostrophe apostrophe hissed the lakeman. "So I am, but take that!" Apostrophe apostrophe the mate was in the very act of striking, when another hiss stayed his uplifted arm. He paused, and then pausing no more, made good his word, spite of Steelkilt's threat, whatever that might have been. The three men were then cut down, all hands were turned to, and, sullenly worked by the moody seamen, the iron pumps clanged as before. Just after dark that day, when one watch had retired below, a clamor was heard in the forecastle, and the two trembling traitors running up, beseeched the cabin door, saying they durst not consort with the crew. Entreaties, cuffs, and kicks could not drive them back, so at their own instance they were put down in the ship's run for salvation. Still, no sign of mutiny reappeared among the rest. On the contrary, it seemed, that mainly at Steelkilt's instigation, they had resolved to maintain the strictest peacefulness, obey all orders to the last, and, when the ship reached port, deserter in a body. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.